The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. Continued. HailAndFire.com. Then I saw in my dream, that when they were got out of the wilderness, they presently saw a town before them, and the name of the town is Vanity. And at the town there is a fair kept, called Vanity Fair. It is kept all the year long. It beareth the name of Vanity Fair because the town where it is kept is lighter than Vanity. And, also because all that is there sold, all that cometh thither, is vanity. As is the saying of the wise, all that cometh is vanity. This fair is no new erected business, but a thing of ancient standing. I will show you the original of it. Almost 5,000 years agone, there were pilgrims walking to the celestial city, as these two honest persons are, and Beelzebub, Apollin, and Legion, with their companions, perceiving by the path that the pilgrims made, that their way to the city lay through this town of Vanity, they contrived here to set up a fair wherein should be sold all sorts of vanity, and that it should last all the year long. Therefore at this fair are all such merchandise sold, as houses, lands, trades, places, honors, preferments, titles, countries, kingdoms, lusts, pleasures, and delights of all sorts, as whores, bawds, wives, husbands, children, masters, servants, lives, blood, bodies, souls, silver, gold, pearls, precious stones, and what not. And, moreover, at this fair there is at all times to be seen juggling cheats, games, plays, fools, apes, knaves, and rogues, and that of every kind. Here are to be seen, too, and that for nothing, thefts, murders, adulteries, false swearers, and that of a blood-red colour. And as in other fairs of less moment, there are the several rows and streets, under their proper names, where such and such wares are vended. So here likewise you have the proper places, rows, streets, viz. Countries and kingdoms, where the wares of this fair are soonest to be found. Here is the Briton row, the French row, the Italian row, the Spanish row, the German row, where several sorts of vanities are to be sold. But, as in other fairs, some one commodity is as the chief of all the fair, so the ware of Rome and her merchandise is greatly promoted in this fair. Only our English nation, with some others, have taken a dislike thereat. Now, as I said, the way to the celestial city lies just through this town where this lusty fair is kept. And he that will go to the city, and yet not go through this town, must needs go out of the world. The Prince of Princes himself, when here, went through this town to his own country, and that upon a fair day too. Yea, and as I think, it was Beelzebub, the chief lord of this fair, that invited him to buy of his vanities. Yea, would have made him lord of the fair, would he but have done him reverence as he went through the town. Yea, because he was such a person of honour, Beelzebub had him from street to street, and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a little time, that he might, if possible, allure the blessed one to cheapen and buy some of his vanities. But he had no mind to the merchandise, and therefore left the town, without laying out so much as one farthing upon these vanities. This fair, therefore, is an ancient thing, of long standing, and a very great fair. Now these pilgrims, as I said, must needs go through this fair. Well, so they did, but, behold, even as they entered into the fair, all the people in the fair were moved, and the town itself as it were in a hubbub about them. And that for several reasons. First, the pilgrims were clothed with such kind of raiment as was diverse from the raiment of any that traded in that fair. The people, therefore, of the fair, made a great gazing upon them. Some said they were fools, some they were bedlams, and some they are outlandish men. Secondly, and as they wondered at their apparel, so they did likewise at their speech. For few could understand what they said. They naturally spoke the language of Canaan, but they that kept the fair were the men of this world. So that, from one end of the fair to the other, they seemed barbarians each to the other. Thirdly, but that which did not a little amuse the merchandisers was, that these pilgrims set very light by all their wares. they cared not so much as to look upon them. And if they called upon them to buy, they would put their fingers in their ears, and cry, "Turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity, and look upwards," signifying that their trade and traffic was in heaven. One chanced mockingly, beholding the carriage of the men, to say unto them, "What will ye buy?" But they, looking gravely upon him, answered, "We buy the truth." At that there was an occasion taken to despise the men the more. Some mocking, some taunting, some speaking reproachfully, and some calling upon others to smite them. At last things came to a hubbub and great stir in the fair, insomuch that all order was confounded. Now was word presently brought to the great one of the fair, who quickly came down, and deputed some of his most trusty friends to take these men into examination, about whom the fair was almost overturned. So the men were brought to examination, and they that sat upon them, asked them whence they came, whither they went, and what they did there, in such an unusual garb. The men told them that they were pilgrims and strangers in the world, and that they were going to their own country, which was the heavenly Jerusalem, and that they had given no occasion to the men of the town, nor yet to the merchandisers, thus to abuse them, and to let them in their journey, except it was for that, when one asked them what they would buy, they said they would buy the truth. But they that were appointed to examine them did not believe them to be any other than bedlams and mad, or else such as came to put all things into a confusion in the fair. Therefore they took them and beat them, and besmeared them with dirt, and then put them into the cage, that they might be made a spectacle to all the men of the fair. Behold Vanity Fair! The pilgrims there are chained and stand beside, even so it was our Lord passed here, and on Mount Calvary died. There, therefore, they lay for some time, and were made the objects of any man's sport, or malice, or revenge, the great one of the fair laughing still at all that befell them. But the men being patient, and not rendering railing for railing, but contrariwise, blessing, and good words for bad, and kindness for injuries done, some men in the fair that were more observing, and less prejudiced than the rest, began to check and blame the baser sort for their continual abuses done by them to the men. They, therefore, in angry man, let fly at them again, counting them as bad as the men in the cage, and telling them that they seemed confederates, and should be made partakers of their misfortunes. The other replied that, for aught they could see, the men were quiet, and sober, and intended nobody any harm, and that there were many that traded in their fair that were more worthy to be put into the cage, yea, and pillory too, than were the men they had abused. Thus, after divers words had passed on both sides, the men behaving themselves all the while very wisely and soberly before them, they fell to some blows among themselves, and did harm one to another. Then were these two poor men brought before their examiners again, and they're charged as being guilty of the late hubbub that had been in the fair. So they beat them pitifully, and hanged irons upon them, and led them in chains up and down the fair, for an example and a terror to others, lest any should speak in their behalf, or join themselves unto them. But Christian and Faithful behaved themselves yet more wisely, and received the ignominy and shame that was cast upon them, with so much meekness and patience, that it won to their side, though but few in comparison of the rest, several of the men in the fair. This put the other party yet into greater rage, insomuch that they concluded the death of these two men. Wherefore they threatened, that the cage nor irons should serve their turn, but that they should die, for the abuse they had done, and for deluding the men of the fair. Then were they remanded to the cage again, until further order should be taken with them. So they put them in, and made their feet fast in the stocks. Here, therefore, they called again to mind what they had heard from their faithful friend Evangelist, and were the more confirmed in their way and sufferings by what he told them would happen to them. They also now comforted each other, that whose lot it was to suffer, even he should have the best of it. Therefore each man secretly wished that he might have that preferment, but committing themselves to the all-wise disposal of him that ruleth all things, with much content, they abode in the condition in which they were, until they should be otherwise disposed of. Then a convenient time being appointed, they brought them forth to their trial, in order to their condemnation. When the time was come, they were brought before their enemies and arraigned. The judge's name was Lord Hakegood. Their indictment was one and the same in substance, though somewhat varying in form, the contents whereof were this: that they were enemies to and disturbers of their trade; that they had made commotions and divisions in the town, and had won a party to their own most dangerous opinions, in contempt of the law of their prince. Now, faithful, play the man, speak for thy God, fear not the wicked's malice, nor their rod, speak boldly, man, the truth is on thy side, die for it, and to life in triumph ride. Faithful's answer for himself. Then Faithful began to answer, that he had only set himself against that which hath set itself against him, that is higher than the highest. And, said he, as for disturbance, I make none, being myself a man of peace. The parties that were won to us, were won by beholding our truth and innocence, and they are only turned from the worse to the better. And as to the king you talk of, since he is Beelzebub, the enemy of our Lord, I defy him and all his angels. Then proclamation was made, that they that had ought to say for their lord the king against the prisoner at the bar, should forthwith appear and give in their evidence. So there came in three witnesses, to wit, Envy, Superstition, and Pictank. They were then asked if they knew the prisoner at the bar, and what they had to say for their lord the king against him. Then stood forth Envy, and said to this effect, My lord, I have known this man a long time, and will attest upon my oath before this honourable bench, that he is judge. Hold. Give him his oath. So they swear him. Then he said, Envy. My lord, this man, notwithstanding his plausible name, is one of the vilest men in our country. He neither regardeth prince nor people, law nor custom, but doth all that he comes to possess all men with certain of his disloyal notions, which he in the general calls principles of faith and holiness. And, in particular, I heard him once myself affirm that Christianity and the customs of our town of vanity were diametrically opposite, and could not be reconciled. By which saying, My lord, he doth at once not only condemn all our laudable doings, but us in the doing of them. Judge. Then did the judge say to him, Hast thou any more to say? Envy. My lord, I could say much more, only I would not be tedious to the court. Yet, if need be, when the other gentlemen have given in their evidence, rather than anything shall be wanting that will dispatch him, I will enlarge my testimony against him. So he was bid to stand by. Then they called Superstition, and bid him look upon the prisoner. They also asked, what he could say for their lord the king against him. Then they swear him. So he began. Superstition. My lord, I have no great acquaintance with this man, nor do I desire to have further knowledge of him. However, this I know, that he is a very pestilent fellow, from some discourse that, the other day, I had with him in this town. For then, talking with him, I heard him say, that our religion was naught, and such by which a man could by no means please God. Which sayings of his, my lord, your lordship very well knows, what necessarily thence will follow, to wit, that we do still worship in vain, are yet in our sins, and finally shall be damned. And this is that which I have to say. Then was Pictank sworn, and bid say what he knew, in behalf of their lord the king, against the prisoner at the bar. Pictank's testimony. Pick. My lord, and you gentlemen all, this fellow I have known of a long time, and have heard him speak things that ought not to be spoke. For he hath railed on our noble prince Beelzebub, and hath spoken contemptibly of his honourable friends, whose names are the Lord Old Man, the Lord Carnal Delight, the Lord Luxurious, the Lord Desire of Vainglory, my old Lord Lechery, Sir Having Greedy, with all the rest of our nobility. And he hath said, moreover, that if all men were of his mind, if possible, there is not one of these noblemen should have any longer a being in this town. Besides, he hath not been afraid to rail on you, My lord, who are now appointed to be his judge, calling you an ungodly villain, with many other such like vilifying terms, with which he hath bespattered most of the gentry of our town. When this pit tank had told his tale, the judge directed his speech to the prisoner at the bar, saying, "Thou runagate, heretic, and traitor, hast thou heard what these honest gentlemen have witnessed against thee? Faithful, may I speak a few words in my own defence?" Judge. Sirrah, thou deservest to live no longer, but to be slain immediately upon the place. Yet, that all men may see our gentleness towards thee, let us hear what thou, vile runagate, hast to say. Faithful's defence of himself. Faithful. 1. I say, then, in answer to what Mr. Envy hath spoken, I never said aught but this, that what rule, or laws, or customs, or people, were flat against the word of God, are diametrically opposite to Christianity. If I have said amiss in this, convince me of my error, and I am ready here before you to make my recantation. 2. As to the second, to wit, Mr. Superstition, and his charge against me, I said only this, that in the worship of God there is required a divine faith. But there can be no divine faith without a divine revelation of the will of God. Therefore, whatever is thrust into the worship of God that is not agreeable to divine revelation, cannot be done but by a human faith, which faith will not be profitable to eternal life. 3. As to what Mr. Picktank hath said, I say, avoiding terms, as that I am said to rail, and the like, that the prince of this town, with all the rabblement, his attendants, by this gentleman named, are more fit for a being in hell, than in this town and country, and so, the Lord have mercy upon me. Then the judge called to the jury, who all this while stood by, to hear and observe, "Gentlemen of the jury, you see this man about whom so great an uproar hath been made in this town. You have also heard what these worthy gentlemen have witnessed against him. Also you have heard his reply and confession. It lieth now in your breasts to hang him or save his life. But yet I think meet to instruct you into our law. There was an act made in the days of Pharaoh the Great, servant to our prince, that lest those of a contrary religion should multiply and grow too strong for him, their males should be thrown into the river. There was also an act made in the days of Nebuchadnezzar the Great, another of his servants, that whosoever would not fall down and worship his golden image, should be thrown into a fiery furnace. There was also an act made in the days of Darius, that whoso, for some time, called upon any god but him, should be cast into the lion's den. Now the substance of these laws this rebel has broken, not only in thought, which is not to be borne, but also in word and deed, which must therefore needs be intolerable. For that of Pharaoh, his law was made upon a supposition, to prevent mischief, no crime being yet apparent. But here is a crime apparent. For the second and third, you see he disputeth against our religion. And for the treason he hath confessed, he deserveth to die the death. Then went the jury out, whose names were, Mr. Blind Man, Mr. No Good, Mr. Mellis, Mr. Love Lust, Mr. Live Loose, Mr. Heady, Mr. High Mind, Mr. Enmity, Mr. Liar, Mr. Cruelty, Mr. Hate Light, and Mr. Implacable, who every one gave in his private verdict against him among themselves, and afterwards unanimously concluded to bring him in guilty before the judge. And first, among themselves, Mr. Blind Man, the foreman, said, "I see clearly that this man is a heretic." Then said Mr. No Good, "Away with such a fellow from the earth." "I," said Mr. Mellis, "for I hate the very looks of him." Then said Mr. Love Lust, "I could never endure him." "Nor I," said Mr. Live Loose, "for he would always be condemning my way." "Hang him, hang him," said Mr. Heady. "A sorry scrub," said Mr. High Mind. "My heart riseth against him," said Mr. Enmity. "He is a rogue," said Mr. Liar. "Hanging is too good for him," said Mr. Cruelty. "Let us dispatch him out of the way," said Mr. Hate Light. Then said Mr. Implacable, "Might I have all the world given me, I could not be reconciled to him. Therefore, let us forthwith bring him in guilty of death. And so they did. Therefore he was presently condemned to be hanged from the place where he was, to the place from whence he came, and there to be put to the most cruel death that could be invented. They therefore brought him out, to do with him according to their law. And, first, they scourged him, then they buffeted him, then they lanced his flesh with knives. After that, they stoned him with stones, then pricked him with their swords. And, last of all, they burned him to ashes at the stake. Thus came faithful to his end. Now I saw that there stood behind the multitude a chariot and a couple of horses, waiting for faithful, who, so soon as his adversaries had dispatched him, was taken up into it, and straightway was carried up through the clouds, with sound of trumpet, the nearest way to the celestial gate. Brave faithful, bravely done in word and deed. Judge, witnesses, and jury have, instead of overcoming thee, but shown their age, when they are dead, thou single quote lt live from age to age. In the new heaven and new earth. But as for Christian, he had some respite, and was remanded back to prison. So he there remained for a space. But he that overrules all things, having the power of their rage in his own hand, so wrought it about, that Christian for the time escaped them, and went his way. And as he went, he sang, saying, Well, faithful, thou hast faithfully professed unto thy Lord, with whom thou shalt be blessed, when faithless ones, with all their vain delights, are crying out under their hellish plights, sing, faithful, sing, and let thy name survive. For though they killed thee, thou art yet alive. Now I saw in my dream, that Christian went not forth alone, for there was one whose name was Hopeful. Being made so by the beholding of Christian and Faithful in their words and behavior, in their sufferings at the fair, who joined himself unto him, and, entering into a brotherly covenant, told him that he would be his companion. Thus, one died to bear testimony to the truth, and another rises out of his ashes, to be a companion with Christian in his pilgrimage. This Hopeful also told Christian, that there were many more of the men in the fair, that would take their time and follow after. So I saw that quickly after they were got out of the fair, they overtook one that was going before them, whose name was Baenz. So they said to him, What countryman, sir? And how far go you this way? He told them that he came from the town of Fair Speech, and he was going to the celestial city. But told them not his name. From Fair Speech, said Christian. Is there any good that lives there? Baenz. Yes, said Baenz, I hope. Christian. Pray, sir, what may I call you? Said Christian. Baenz. I am a stranger to you, and you to me. If you be going this way, I shall be glad of your company. If not, I must be content. Christian. This town of Fair Speech, said Christian, I have heard of. And, as I remember, they say it is a wealthy place. Baenz. Yes, I would assure you that it is. And I have very many rich kindred there. Christian. Pray, who are your kindred there? If a man may be so bold. Baenz. Almost the whole town. And in particular, my lord Turnabout, my lord Time Server, my lord Fair Speech. From whose ancestors that town first took its name, also Mr. Smoothman, Mr. Facing Both Ways, Mr. Anything, and the parson of our parish, Mr. Two Tongues, was my mother's own brother by father's side. And to tell you the truth, I am become a gentleman of good quality, yet my great-grandfather was but a waterman, looking one way and rowing another, and I got most of my estate by the same occupation. Christian. Are you a married man? Baenz. Yes, and my wife is a very virtuous woman, the daughter of a virtuous woman. She was my Lady Feining's daughter, therefore she came of a very honourable family, and is arrived to such a pitch of breeding, that she knows how to carry it to all, even to prince and peasant. It is true we somewhat differ in religion from those of the stricter sort, yet but in two small points. First, we never strive against wind and tide. Secondly, We are always most zealous when religion goes in his silver slippers. We love much to walk with him in the street, if the sun shines, and the people applaud him. Then Christian stepped a little aside to his fellow, hopeful, saying, It runs in my mind that this is one by ends of fair speech. And if it be he, we have as very a knave in our company as dwelleth in all these parts. Then said Hopeful, Ask him. Methinks he should not be ashamed of his name. So Christian came up with him again, and said, Sir, you talk as if you knew something more than all the world doth. And if I take not my mark amiss, I deem I have half a guess of you, is not your name Mr. Byends, of fair speech? Byends. This is not my name, but indeed it is a nickname that is given me by some that cannot abide me, and I must be content to bear it as a reproach, as other good men have borne theirs before me. Christian. But did you never give an occasion to men to call you by this name? Byends. Never, never. The worst that ever I did to give them an occasion to give me this name was, that I had always the luck to jump in my judgment with the present way of the times, whatever it was, and my chance was to get thereby. But if things are thus cast upon me, let me count them a blessing. But let not the malicious load me therefore with reproach. Christian. I thought, indeed, that you were the man that I heard of. And to tell you what I think, I fear this name belongs to you more properly than you are willing we should think it doth. Byends. Well, if you will thus imagine, I cannot help it. You shall find me a fair company keeper, if you will still admit me your associate. Christian. If you will go with us, you must go against wind and tide. The which, I perceive, is against your opinion. You must also own religion in his rags, as well as when in his silver slippers. And stand by him, too, when bound in irons, as well as when he walketh the streets with applause. Byends. You must not impose, nor lord it over my faith. Leave me to my liberty, and let me go with you. Christian. Not a step further, unless you will do in what I propound as we. Then said Byends, I shall never desert my old principles, since they are harmless and profitable. If I may not go with you, I must do as I did before you overtook me, even go by myself, until some overtake me that will be glad of my company. Now I saw in my dream that Christian and Hopeful forsook him, and kept their distance before him. But one of them looking back, saw three men following Mr. Byends, and behold, as they came up with him, he made them a very low conge. And they also gave him a compliment. The men's names were Mr. Hold the World, Mr. Money Love, and Mr. Save All. Men that Mr. Byends had formerly been acquainted with. For in their minority they were schoolfellows, and were taught by one Mr. Gripeman, a schoolmaster in Lovegain, which is a market town in the county of Coveting, in the north. This schoolmaster taught them the art of getting, either by violence, cozenage, flattery, lying, or by putting on the guise of religion. And these four gentlemen had attained much of the art of their master, so that they could each of them have kept such a school themselves. Well, when they had, as I said, thus saluted each other, Mr. Moneylove said to Mr. Byends, Who are they upon the road before us? For Christian and Hopeful were yet within view. Byends' character of the pilgrims. Byends. They are a couple of far countrymen, that, after their mode, are going on pilgrimage. Moneylove. Alas! Why did they not stay, that we might have had their good company? For they, and we, and you, sir, I hope, are all going on pilgrimage. Byends. We are so, indeed. But the men before us are so rigid, and love so much their own notions, and do also so lightly esteem the opinions of others, that let a man be never so godly, yet if he jumps not with them in all things, they thrust him quite out of their company. Save All. That is bad, but we read of some that are righteous overmuch. And such men's rigidness prevails with them to judge and condemn all but themselves. But, I pray, what, and how many, were the things wherein you differed? Byends. Why, they, after their headstrong man, conclude that it is duty to rush on their journey all weathers. And I am for waiting for wind and tide. They are for hazarding all for God at a clap. And I am for taking all advantages to secure my life and estate. They are for holding their notions, though all other men are against them. But I am for religion in what, and so far as the times, and my safety, will bear it. They are for religion when in rags and contempt. But I am for him when he walks in his golden slippers, in the sunshine, and with applause. Hold the worldly wise men. Aye, and hold you there still, good Mr. Byens. For my part, I can count him but a fool, that, having the liberty to keep what he has, shall be so unwise as to lose it. Let us be wise as serpents. It is best to make hay when the sun shines. You see how the bee lieth still all winter, and bestirs her only when she can have profit with pleasure. God sends sometimes rain, and sometimes sunshine. If they be such fools to go through the first, yet let us be content to take fair weather along with us. For my part, I like that religion best that will stand with the security of God's good blessings unto us. For who can imagine, that as ruled by his reason, since God has bestowed upon us the good things of this life, but that he would have us keep them for his sake. Abraham and Solomon grew rich in religion. And Job says, that a good man shall lay up gold as dust. But he must not be such as the men before us, if they be as you have described them. Save all. I think that we are all agreed in this matter, and therefore there needs no more words about it. Money love. No, there needs no more words about this matter, indeed. For he that believes neither scripture nor reason. And you see we have both on our side, neither knows his own liberty, nor seeks his own safety. By ends. My brethren, we are, as you see, going all on pilgrimage. And, for our better diversion from things that are bad, give me leave to propound unto you this question. Suppose a man, a minister, or a tradesman, ambassand see, should have an advantage lie before him, to get the good blessings of this life, yet so as that he can by no means come by them except, in appearance at least, he becomes extraordinarily zealous in some points of religion that he meddled not with before. May he not use these means to attain his end, and yet be a right honest man? Money love. I see the bottom of your question. And, with these gentlemen's good leave, I will endeavor to shape you an answer. And first, to speak to your question as it concerns a minister himself, suppose a minister, a worthy man, possessed but of a very small benefice, and has in his eye a greater, more fat, and plump by far. He has also now an opportunity of getting of it, yet so as by being more studious, by preaching more frequently and zealously, and, because the temper of the people requires it, by altering of some of his principles. For my part, I see no reason but a man may do this. Provided he has a call, aye, and more a great deal besides, and yet be an honest man. For why, 1. His desire of a greater benefice is lawful. This cannot be contradicted, since it is set before him by providence. So then, he may get it, if he can, making no question for conscience' sake. 2. Besides, his desire after that benefice makes him more studious, a more zealous preacher, ambassand see. And so makes him a better man. Yea, makes him better improve his parts, which is according to the mind of God. 3. Now, as for his complying with the temper of his people, by dissenting, to serve them, some of his principles, this argueth. 1. That he is of a self-denying temper. 2. Of a sweet and winning deportment. And so. 3. More fit for the ministerial function. 4. I conclude, then, that a minister that changes a small for a great, should not, for so doing, be judged as covetous. But rather, since he has improved in his parts and industry thereby, be counted as one that pursues his call, and the opportunity put into his hands to do good. And now to the second part of the question, which concerns the tradesman you mentioned. Suppose such a one to have but a poor employ in the world, but by becoming religious, he may mend his market, perhaps get a rich wife, or more and far better customers to his shop. For my part, I see no reason but that this may be lawfully done. Fui, 1. To become religious is a virtue, by what means soever a man becomes so. 2. Nor is it unlawful to get a rich wife, or more custom to my shop. 3. Besides, the man that gets these by becoming religious, gets that which is good, of them that are good, by becoming good himself. So then here is a good wife, and good customers, and good gain, and all these by becoming religious, which is good. Therefore, to become religious, to get all these, is a good and profitable design. This answer, thus made by this Mr. Moneylove to Mr. Byenza's question, was highly applauded by them all. Wherefore they concluded upon the whole, that it was most wholesome and advantageous. And because, as they thought, no man was able to contradict it, and because Christian and Hopeful were yet within call, they jointly agreed to assault them with the question as soon as they overtook them. And the rather because they had opposed Mr. Byenza before. So they called after them, and they stopped, and stood still till they came up to them. But they concluded, as they went, that not Mr. Byenza, but old Mr. Hold the World, should propound the question to them, because, as they supposed, their answer to him would be without the remainder of that heat that was kindled betwixt Mr. Byenza and them, at their parting a little before. So they came up to each other, and after a short salutation, Mr. Hold the World propounded the question to Christian and his fellow, and bid them to answer it if they could. Christian. Then said Christian, even a babe in religion may answer 10,000 such questions. For if it be unlawful to follow Christ for loaves, as it is in the 6th of John, how much more abominable is it to make of him and religion a stalking horse to get and enjoy the world? Nor do we find any other than heathons, hypocrites, devils, and witches, that are of this opinion. 1. Heathons. For when Hamor and Shechem had a mind to the daughter and cattle of Jacob, and saw that there was no way for them to come at them, but by becoming circumcised, they say to their companions, if every male of us be circumcised, as they are circumcised, shall not their cattle, and their substance, and every beast of theirs, be ours? Their daughter and their cattle were that which they sought to obtain, and their religion the stalking horse they made use of to come at them. Read the whole story. 2. The hypocritical Pharisees were also of this religion. Long prayers were their pretense, but to get widows' houses was their intent. And greater damnation was from God their judgment. 3. Judas the devil was also of this religion. He was religious for the bag, that he might be possessed of what was therein. But he was lost, cast away, and the very son of perdition. 4. Simon the witch was of this religion too. For he would have had the Holy Ghost, that he might have got money therewith. And his sentence from Peter's mouth was according. 5. Neither will it out of my mind, but that man that takes up religion for the world, will throw away religion for the world. For so surely as Judas resigned the world in becoming religious, so surely did he also sell religion and his master for the same. To answer the question, therefore, affirmatively, as I perceive you have done, and to accept of, as authentic, such answer, is both heathenish, hypocritical, and devilish. And your reward will be according to your works. Then they stood staring one upon another, but had not wherewith to answer Christian. Hopeful also approved of the soundness of Christian's answer. So there was a great silence among them. Mr. Byenza and his company also staggered and kept behind, that Christian and Hopeful might outgo them. Then said Christian to his fellow, if these men cannot stand before the sentence of men, what will they do with the sentence of God? And if they are mute when dealt with by vessels of clay, what will they do when they shall be rebuked by the flames of a devouring fire? Then Christian and Hopeful outwent them again, and went till they came to a delicate plain called Ades, where they went with much content. But the plain was but narrow, so they were quickly got over it. Now at the further side of the plain was a little hill called Luca, and in that hill a silver mine, which some of them that had formerly gone that way, because of the rarity of it, had turned aside to see. But going too near the brink of the pit, the ground being deceitful under them, broke, and they were slain. Some also had been maimed there, and could not, to their dying day, be their own men again. Then I saw in my dream, that a little off the road, over against the silver mine, stood Demas. Gentlemen like to call to passengers to come and see, who said to Christian and his fellow, "Ho! Turn aside hither, and I will show you a thing." Christian: "What thing so deserving as to turn us out of the way to see it?" Demas: "Here is a silver mine, and some digging in it for treasure. If you will come, with a little pains you may richly provide for yourselves." Hopeful: "Then," said Hopeful, "let us go see." Christian: "Not I," said Christian, "I have heard of this place before now. And how many have there been slain? And besides that, treasure is a snare to those that seek it, for it hindereth them in their pilgrimage." Then Christian called to Demas, saying, "Is not the place dangerous? Hath it not hindered many in their pilgrimage?" Demas: "Not very dangerous, except to those that are careless." But withal, he blushed as he spake. Christian: "Then," said Christian to Hopeful, "let us not stir a step, but still keep on our way." Hopeful: "I will warrant you, when Byends comes up, if he hath the same invitation as we, he will turn in thither to see." Christian: "No doubt thereof, for his principles lead him that way, and 100 to 1 but he dies there." Demas: "Then Demas called again, saying, "But will you not come over and see?" Christian: "Then Christian roundly answered, saying, "Demas, thou art an enemy to the right ways of the Lord of this way, and hast been already condemned for thine own turning aside, by one of his majesty's judges. And why seekest thou to bring us into the like condemnation? Besides, if we at all turn aside, our Lord and King will certainly hear thereof, and will there put us to shame, where we would stand with boldness before him." Demas cried again, that he also was one of their fraternity, and that if they would tarry a little, he also himself would walk with them. Christian: "Then," said Christian, "what is thy name? Is it not the same by the which I have called thee?" Demas: "Yes, my name is Demas. I am the son of Abraham." Christian: "I know you. Gehazi was your great-grandfather, and Judas your father. And you have trod in their steps. It is but a devilish prank that thou usest. Thy father was hanged for a traitor, and thou deservest no better reward. Assure thyself, that when we come to the king, we will do him word of this thy behavior." Thus they went their way. By this time Byends and his companions were come again within sight, and they, at the first beck, went over to Demas. Now, whether they fell into the pit by looking over the brink thereof, or whether they went down to dig, or whether they were smothered in the bottom by the damps that commonly arise, of these things I am not certain. But this I observed, that they never were seen again in the way. Then sang Christian: "Byends and silver Demas both agree? One calls, the other runs, that he may be a sharer in his lucre. So these do take up in this world, and no further go. Now I saw that, just on the other side of this plain, the pilgrims came to a place where stood an old monument, hard by the highway side, at the sight of which they were both concerned, because of the strangeness of the form thereof. For it seemed to them as if it had been a woman transformed into the shape of a pillar. Here, therefore, they stood looking, and looking upon it, but could not for a time tell what they should make thereof. At last Hopeful espied written above the head thereof, a writing in an unusual hand. But he being no scholar, called to Christian. For he was learned to see if he could pick out the meaning. So he came, and after a little laying of letters together, he found the same to be this: "Remember Lot's wife." So he read it to his fellow. After which they both concluded that that was the pillar of salt into which Lot's wife was turned, for her looking back with a covetous heart, when she was going from Sodom for safety. Which sudden and amazing sight gave them occasion of this discourse?
Christian. Ah, my brother. This is a seasonable sight. It came opportunely to us after the invitation which Demertz gave us to come over to view the hill Lucca. And had we gone over, as he desired us, and as thou wast inclining to do, my brother, we had, for aught I know, been made ourselves like this woman, a spectacle for those that shall come after to behold.
Hopeful. I am sorry that I was so foolish, and am made to wonder that I am not now as Lot's wife. For wherein was the difference betwixt her sin and mine? She only looked back. And I had a desire to go see. Let grace be adored, and let me be ashamed that ever such a thing should be in mine heart.
Christian.
Let us take notice of what we see here, for our help for time to come. This woman escaped one judgment, for she fell not by the destruction of Sodom. Yet she was destroyed by another, as we see she is turned into a pillar of salt.
Hopeful.
True. And she may be to us both caution and example.
Caution, that we should shun her sin.
Or a sign of what judgment will overtake such as shall not be prevented by this caution.
So Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, with the 250 men that perished in their sin, did also become a sign or example to others to beware.
But above all, I muse at one thing, to wit, how Demas and his fellows can stand so confidently yonder to look for the treasure, which this woman, but for looking behind her after. For we read not that she stepped one foot out of the way, was turned into a pillar of salt. Especially since the judgment which overtook her did make her an example, within sight of where they are. For they cannot choose but see her, did they but lift up their eyes.
Christian.
It is a thing to be wondered at, and it argueth that their hearts are grown desperate in the case. And I cannot tell who to compare them to so fitly, as to them that pick pockets in the presence of the judge, or that will cut purses under the gallows. It is said of the men of Sodom, that they were sinners exceedingly, because they were sinners before the Lord, that is, in his eyesight, and notwithstanding the kindnesses that he had showed them. For the land of Sodom was now like the Garden of Eden heretofore. This, therefore, provoked him the more to jealousy, and made their plague as hot as the fire of the Lord out of heaven could make it. And it is most rationally to be concluded, that such, even such as these are, that shall sin in the sight, yea, and that too in despite of such examples that are set continually before them, to caution them to the contrary, must be partakers of severest judgments.
Hopeful.
Doubtless thou hast said the truth. But what a mercy is it, that neither thou, but especially I, am not made myself this example. This ministereth occasion to us to thank God, to fear before him, and always to remember Lot's wife.
I saw, then, that they went on their way to a pleasant river, which David the king called the river of God, but John, the river of the water of life.
Now their way lay just upon the bank of the river. Here, therefore, Christian and his companion walked with great delight. They drank also of the water of the river, which was pleasant, and enlivening to their weary spirits. Besides, on the banks of this river, on either side, were green trees, that bore all manner of fruit. And the leaves of the trees were good for medicine. With the fruit of these trees they were also much delighted. And the leaves they eat to prevent surfeits, and other diseases that are incident to those that heat their blood by travels. On either side of the river was also a meadow, curiously beautified with lilies, and it was green all the year long. In this meadow they lay down, and slept. For here they might lie down safely. When they awoke, they gathered again of the fruit of the trees, and drank again of the water of the river, and then lay down again to sleep. Thus they did several days and nights. Then they sang, "Behold ye how these crystal streams do glide, to comfort pilgrims by the highway side. The meadows green, beside their fragrant smell, yield dainties for them. And he that can tell what pleasant fruit, yea, leaves, these trees do yield, will soon sell all, that he may buy this field." So when they were disposed to go on, for they were not, as yet, at their journey's end, they ate and drank,
and departed.